Tomorrow is a holiday that brethren over the years have struggled with. You know, once upon a time, a brother did not put on a soldier's uniform. In fact, if he did, that was considered to be a reason for not being in the church anymore. Of course, in our denomination, things have changed a bit. But still, we struggle as a peace church with what to do with Veterans Day. Now, let me start out with some things. First of all, let me say, to those of you who served in the military, thank you. Did you hear that? Thank you. Second, may I say that some of the strongest proponents of peace, the most ardent peacemakers that, in my experience, that I have known, have been veterans who have experienced the hell of war. And they have resolved, never again, not on my watch. Third, let me remind you of a bit of history. Tomorrow's holiday was not always named Veterans Day. Do you know what it was originally called? That name change only happened in the 50s. Does anybody else what it was called? Okay, an Armistice Day, what did that celebrate? It celebrated the end of the Great War. The Great War. They didn't even have a World War II to say, well, this was World War I, the end to World War I. This was a celebration of the end of conflict on the 11th day of the 11th month of 1918. It was proclaimed a year later on that same day, 1919, by President Woodrow Wilson. Now, how you end a war matters. And while armistice was a real celebration, there were some real problems with how things ended. The armistice, like a lot of solutions to problems, was imperfect. And in many ways, that armistice led to not only another world war, but also to some of the conflicts we are still dealing with today. You see, part of the story was that the agreement was, okay, Germany and the Axis powers, you know, ceased their whatever, and it was a victory for the Allies, but the Axis never surrendered. They never said, we lost. That was a problem because within the military of Germany, there was still an underlying thing that said, we didn't lose the war. Somebody else did. The politicians did. And so there was that underground of kind of, they failed to learn the lesson of World War I and its horrors. And it was a horrible, horrible war. I mean, we talk about gassings and things like that happening in Syria. Well, that was common procedure during the Second War, and so many veterans came home just severely broken from it. But also, the reparations that Germany and the other Axis powers were forced to make put Germany in a severe economic decline. And some say that that decline, worsened by the Depression, paved the way for a supposed savior to arrive on the scene. And that savior was who? Adolf Hitler, who many persons, even how many years ago, were calling the Antichrist, the lawless one, even though he was, strangely enough, he was a law and order man. Paved the way for that, So the armistice really, the ending of the war led to the next war. But not only that, some of the other agreements and how Europe dealt with its colonies and the new lines that were drawn among these colonies led to a lot of our problems right now in the Middle East and in other places, because those lines were European lines, not really lines drawn by the people who lived there. And a lot of the conflict that we are now facing, you know, in Arabic countries and other places, had its roots back in the armistice. How you end a war matters. Now, I bring up that because leading up to this great war, through this great war, you know, there was a building up, really, in this time period of movements within the Christian community who were just reading material like we've just read, and were saying, oh, it's being fulfilled now. Some churches, Adventists and other Millerites and things like that, during, you know, I guess a lot of them were before, but it really went flowered in the First World War. Of course, after the armistice, there was a general sigh of relief and the proclamation of peace, and there was great optimism after the war, which, you know, you could say the kingdom had come, but it didn't really, did it? The hell of war continued. Now, every generation has had its times of lawlessness, its moments when chaos reigns. And when chaos reigns, the powers that can take over do take over. And so this particular text is relevant to every particular day and age. And when it comes to apocalyptic, and this one section is what we would call apocalyptic material, I always am very cautious about reading it through the eyes of those who have power. I believe that those who have power should never take charge of apocalyptic material in the Bible, because apocalyptic literature in the Bible is intended to give hope and comfort to those who don't have power, to those who are struggling in the middle of things. Apocalyptic material is never intended to give us warrant for continuing earthly conflict, for treating what God has given us with whatever. It is intended to derive hope. Hope is the key word. And what Paul is seeking to do with the people in Thessalonica here is basically telling them to calm down, to take a breath of fresh air, and to breathe, and to have faith, to rely on what they already know, to stand firm in it, and to face into tomorrow with faith. That is the basic hope. Of course, in that day and age, there were, as it says, there were those who were saying, the kingdom has already come, to people who were living with an understanding that Christ was going to return at any moment. That was the understanding of the earliest believers of Jesus, you know, that he had risen from the grave and had ascended to be with the Father, but he was imminently going to return the way he came. And there were some who were saying, oh, that's already happened. And you can understand the consternation of people saying, what? I didn't see it happen. Are you kidding me? Has the kingdom really come and I missed it? And he was just saying, calm down. Calm down. Calm down. Now, there were some things I want to pick out in here, but first, let me hit what is the heart of what he says. The heart really is that call to be thankful for what God is doing, that call to just keep sharing the good news and to keep walking toward the kingdom in the directions that Jesus led. To stand firm, and let me return to that at the end, to stand firm and hold back to the teaching, understanding that Christ is a part of all of this. And Christ will help hold fast and will give comfort, and comfort means strength and hope. Let me return to this one passage, though, where it says, where Paul writes that he's talking about those who have fell to the delusion, into believing what is false. And he says, so that all who have not believed in the truth, but took pleasure in unrighteousness, will be condemned. And that word, unrighteousness, is what I want to get at. It's interesting, checking a couple different translations. It's interesting how we translate that word from the Greek that led to this unrighteousness. This word unrighteousness. For those who, I guess, standing here who would be sort of to the right of me, theologically, politically, or whatever, they hear the word righteousness in this. Unrighteousness. And in hearing that, they tend to be thinking of personal morality. And how what's going to happen in times of problem will be that people are going to be living just terrible lives. They're going to be pulled in so many different ways, sexually and otherwise. And it's more an issue of personal morality. Whereas those to the left of me tend to hear that word and translate it as injustice. And justice talking about the systems that are in place in our world, the powers and the principalities that lead to the rich getting richer and the poor getting poorer, and the things that lead, you know, that are larger than us. I guess you'd call them more the social sins. So the personal sins and the social sins. Righteousness and injustice. And those are somewhat the fault lines that we find ourselves in the church at present in our country. We have those who are looking towards, you know, the issues are primarily personal. And those who are saying, no, the issues are primarily social. And what I'd like to say is the Bible does not divide between the two. In fact, that particular word that we translate either as unrighteousness or injustice in the Old Testament were actually translated by two words, which I memorized back in seminary. The Hebrew words were mishpat and tzedakah. Justice and righteousness. The two go side by side. In the Old Testament, it's both. Not either or, it's both and. So you can implant into this time of injustice and unrighteousness that happens before the end as pretty much describing any situation that we face where personal morality flies out the window. And where injustice reigns, and the rich get richer, and the poor get poorer. Recalling that in the Bible, as we read earlier, you know, the Bible is full of passages that talk about taking care of those who are the least and the lost, and paying special attention to them. And in the Old Testament especially, when societies didn't pay attention to those on the margins of the society, they were judged, you know, to be full of sin. So, I mean, we've got these two. And what I would like to suggest for us is that when Paul is talking about standing firm in what you know, I don't want us to be thinking in terms of standing still, Because the Church of Jesus Christ never stands still. We are always moving in the direction of God's kingdom. We are always walking in the way of Christ. We are never just sitting in place. And what I'd like to suggest is whenever you hear that word, standing firm and holding on to what's true, I would like you to think of that. Standing is not staying in place, but of making sure that your feet are firmly planted as you walk in the direction of the kingdom, as you follow Jesus in his way. And if it takes it, think of it in terms of those two Hebrew words. For me, I think of it in terms of mishpat tzedakah, mishpat tzedakah, mishpat tzedakah, mishpat tzedakah. Justice, righteousness. I know that's adding a bit of complication to your daily walk, but just think about that. That's what it means to hold firm. People of justice and right relationships. So paying attention to the social ills as well as the personal ills. Standing firm. The firm foundation. You know, when we sing "How Firm a Foundation," and this is your cue, when we speak of firm foundation, we're not talking about being, just remaining in place. We're talking about moving with the Lord. So, folks, as you sing, I know the pews make it hard to walk and sing at the same time, but this is a marching song. Okay? It's not one for remaining in place. So let's stand and sing. What's the number?
5, 6, 7.
5, 6, 7. Let's stand if you are able and sing this song of faith.